Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this episode of Nostalgia Town. And our guest today is Gene Kitson. Gene is an Australian performer, writer, and comedian in theatre and print, on radio and television. She made her comedy debut at Melbourne's comedy venue Le Joke in a series of solo performances and then in the stage version of Let the Blood Run Free. Jean is a regular guest on Thank God It's Friday with ABC 702, and she's a prolific author. And your most recent book, Jean, is We Need to Talk About Mum and Dad from Pan Macmillan. Tell us a little bit about your book.
Well, I started writing the book because I have elderly parents, and after I wrote my book on menopause, I realized that there were so many people in my age group who had children still at home, and then they also had elderly parents that they were really struggling with how to manage and what they should do and what they shouldn't do, and trying to navigate the system with all the home care packages, thinking about residential aged care but being terrified by the stories, trying to downsize, whether to stay in their own home. There were so many questions, and I was going through it myself. I'm going through it with my parents, and it's a very, very difficult time, a time of great change, and a time where you feel you don't want to make any mistakes supporting your parents as they age, and the best way to age, what is it, and how can we be most supportive. And so, because I didn't know what to do either, I decided, oh, well, that would be my next book, to be a sort of guidebook if you want to know where to find care, or what numbers to ring, or what happens when they become ill, or anything like that. That's all in the book.
And what you're noticing, I suppose, is that the relationship you had with your parents is flipped. They used to look after you, and now you're looking after them.
That's right. Yeah, it's a complex time. It's like we become parents of our parents, but at the same time, you can't let that relationship dominate. It's best if we're just adult to adult, and when we try to parent our parents, that's when, you know, there can be conflict. It's interesting about those roles. Well, there's a model of communication called transactional communication model, and it's a very simple idea, but I think it's really apt for when we care for our parents. And it's the idea that we take on roles, either adult, parent, or child. And the best way to communicate is adult to adult. But sometimes in a conversation, a person, if they want to get their point across or they want to dominate or have the last word, will turn into a parent role where they say, this is the way it is. And that often forces the other person into a child role, saying, well, you can just rack off because I don't think that's right. And then there's conflict. So the best way we can communicate is actually adult to adult, and keep trying to work things out, and not try to say to our parents, well, I think this is the way it should be and this is what you should do. Not be scared for them. Be, you know, really talk about aging in a non-fearful way. I mean, I guess that's a thing, Jeff. We don't talk about aging as much as we should, and end of life.
And it's more empowering, isn't it, when you treat your parents as adults? And it's disempowering for anybody when they're being treated as a child.
Yes, it's so true.
We are here on Nostalgia Town, and this is where we speak with well-known Australians about their formative cultural experiences. So my question to you now, Jean, is what were your formative cultural experiences, the ones that you grew up with, your favourite songs, your movies, your films, other theatre and art?
I grew up in two places, really. For my first 12 years, I was in this bucolic, pastoral, rural town called Lilydale. And back then it was a little country town, and now it's just part of the urban sprawl of Victoria, and it's part of the Yarra Valley, which is known for its wineries. But when I was growing up in Lilydale, it was just cows and dairy farms, and we used to go mushrooming, you know, we used to get buckets and go through the fence and pick mushrooms and then run like hell when you saw a cow coming towards you. And it was a beautiful, lots of orchards and wild daffodils. And we spent all our years as kids on our bikes. You know, a few of us, we'd just ride on these empty roads. And I suppose in terms of culture, the nearest thing I got to high art was at the Lilydale Cemetery had Dame Nellie Melba's, where she was buried. And there was sort of this beautiful sort of gravestone and marble, and it had a big hedge around it. and we kids used to ride our bikes down to the cemetery for something to do, for a bit of a thrill. We used to ride our bikes down to the cemetery. We'd have a look at all the very old gravestones and, you know, scare each other, and then we'd end up at Dame Nellie Melba's, you know, crypt, if you like, and we'd lie on that and we'd smoke. So that's about it. And on her gravestone was words from La Boheme, but we had no clue, really. We knew she was an opera singer, but we were really young. And in those days, you know, there was no access to information on the internet like we have now. Those days, I remember my dad, every Sunday morning, the music we had were things like Elvis, Buddy Holly. Every Sunday morning, my dad would make us breakfast in bed. He'd put on Buddy Holly. And the song that springs to mind is "The Sky Is Blue." No, the sky is blue. There's not a cloud. There's world of you, and it's raining. Anyway, Dad would put that on, and we'd know he'd be up making toast, and he'd make us jam on toast, and then he'd stick it under the griller just to warm it up a bit, and then he'd bring it into us in bed. And then we would take a bite, and it would be like molten lava, and we'd all stick to the roof of our mouth and burn our mouths to pieces. But apart from that, apart from third-degree burns to the roof of our mouths, it was, it was easy times, simple. Everything was very simple. You didn't have a lot of friends. You had a small group of friends. And then we moved. We used to go to Sorrento on holidays, because Dad had a cousin who had a holiday house down there. And then one holiday, we were down there. And then, you know how you say, oh, I wish this holiday could go on forever. I wish we could just stay here forever. Well, we did. We never went back to Lilydale again. Mum and Dad just decided to move to Sorrento. I never went back. Never saw the family home. Never saw my friends. We just stayed there. Dad got a job in the local garage. Mum got a job in the local doctors. Then there was the beach culture, which was so different to this rural, you know, pastoral culture. The beach culture was, like, scary. There was the classic drugs, sex, rock and roll, panel vans, cool, everything about whether you were in, you were out. Everyone was so much more sort of worldly I was going to say sophisticated, but that's not true. And we had dances like Tomcats. It was quite sexist. You know, the girls were always there just to sort of wax the boys' boards or, you know, be in the panel van with them. That's it. You know, it was just this whole other world that was really scary for someone like me who was very innocent. So it was just... And then we had Lou Reed and Frank Zappa and Leonard Cohen, and all that music came in, Eagles, I suppose, Beatles, Rolling Stones, and then all the skinhead music and, oh, yes, panel vans, drive-ins, going to the drive-in, hiding people under the mattress in the back, always hiding people in your car to get into the drive-in, backing up to the drive-in screen, opening the back of the panel van, and all lying there drinking vodka and ouzo in paper cups, Chico rolls, Dim Sims, chips. I remember one day going to the drive-in in my car. I had an old Wolseley. That was my first car, very old Wolseley, because my dad said it was safe. So that was my first car. And I remember leaving the drive-in and forgetting to take the speaker out of the window and taking off, because there was always convoys of cars down on the Mornington Peninsula. That's what we did for fun. There was nothing else to do as teenagers. We just sort of drank and drove, which was terrible. And we lost a lot of friends. But as I said, you know, a party in those days was like, if 8 people turned up, that was great. Like, we didn't have these huge networks that young people have nowadays. You know, 8 people was a party. But I remember taking off in the drive-in and forgetting to take the speaker out and just hearing this whack against the pillar of the car and, ripping it from its stead. I had that speaker for a long time, I don't know. Anyway, so those were interesting times.
You had your car. That means you had your car radio. What were you listening to on the car radio?
Well, I got my license in the 70s. I was a teenager, so it would have been still... I guess we still would have been listening to the Beatles, but Beach Boys and you know, Van Morrison. I suppose when I look back, I think of 60s, all the 60s songs. But then we had Skyhooks and We had Australian Crawl, and we had Daddy Cool, and Lobby Lloyd and these coloured balls, and my friend's father used to organise the Sunbury Festival, so we always went to Sunbury, and Sunbury was a big music festival, and the first year it rained. I think it was the first year, the second year, it rained like mad, and it was, well, everyone, the stage was at the bottom of the hill, of course, and everyone was on the hill, and it just turned to mud, and everyone was sliding down towards the stage, and there was this big sort of mosh pit in front of the stage, and we couldn't stop, you know, there were thousands of young people sliding, and then when you got to the wire, there were all these security people with nunchuckers. And they just crack people over the head with their nunchuckers.
Now we have to worry about drugs. Back then you had to worry about violence from the security guards.
Yeah, the security were the violent ones. We weren't. We were all peace, love and happiness. And, you know, there was a lot of, I suppose, dope around and everyone grew it and that sort of thing. And there was a lot of alcohol, and there were small pockets of harder stuff and LSD and speed and things like that. But, you know, it's like nowadays, there's some people who, you know, get into that, and but most people don't. Most people are just, you know, having a smoke or a drink or something. But in those days, you could drink and drive. You know, there were no breathalyzers or anything. And it seemed that it was just part of that culture. Yeah, it was... It was sort of very wild and free time, but it was a dangerous time too. There was a lot of things happening that today would be totally unacceptable, like not just drink driving, but unprotected sex and women being coerced into sex and, you know, and all sorts of things like that. The things that nowadays, thank goodness, are unacceptable. And I have daughters and they would find that behaviour intolerable. But in those days, that's, you know, that's what it was, even though we were also feminists and we studied the female eunuch at school, and Germaine Greer was, you know, a hero, and my mother was a feminist, but it was still, you know, boys had cars, the girls had boyfriends. But, and that was one thing that my mum and dad did for my sister and I, they made sure we had a car as soon as we turned 18, so that we would have freedom and independence, and we wouldn't be relying on boys for rides. Boys who were drinking. We wouldn't be, you know, getting into cars with people who were drunk. And we could leave parties when we wanted to and arrive when we wanted to. So we had an enormous independence by having our own cars and knowing how to drive cars safely. And my dad had been not only a mechanic, but he was a racing car driver. So he taught us how to fix our own cars, you know, if they broke down, what to do, and how to drive confidently, how to drive out of trouble. You know, if you got into fish tanning and that, what to do and how to corner and things, which was lucky because our cars had no seat belts and they were always full of kids. We'd always have, you know, it was packed to the gunnels. There'd be four people across the front seat and, you know, four in the back. So it was a big responsibility.
We're all of us getting a little older now, and it's great to reminisce and have these opportunities for nostalgia. But as we look back on our lives and look at the way our lives are progressing, we ask ourselves, can aging still be fun?
Yes, it can be. It can be much more fun than our teenage years, actually. It's we know things when we're older, and we have a different sort of fun. We have fun with friends and we have fun with our families, and if we've got partners, we have fun with each other, and our fun, it might be different to what it was then. You know, it would be more cultural, like more movies and books, and we have an endless supply of things on television to watch. And I mean, aging isn't easy, and we're always, and it varies for different people. I mean, some people at 70 will be as old as some people at 90, depending on what our bodies have in store for us. So that's the difficult thing, how to manage our aging bodies rather than our minds or our feelings or anything. What do our individual bodies have in store for us? Are our backs going to give out? Are we going to get arthritis? Are our eyes, are we still going to be able to see? But it's always, life is always adjustments, small adjusting. And, you know, you get through all your adjustments. But aging is interesting because you've learned about yourself and life a lot more. You've learned humility because you've had people you love die, and you know death, and you know grief, and you're not as frightened of them anymore, one would hope. And you accept them as a fundamental part of life, and you've learned, and it's humbling. And as I said, it teaches you humility because you realize that there are some things you can't, you don't have any control over, and life and death are two of them.
Now, in your life today, Jean, how important are your social connections to your happiness, your well-being?
Oh, they're very important, Jeff, because caring, having people you care about is a gift, really, and it gives your life meaning and purpose, and hopefully having people who care about you. It's sort of everything. Other things are transient. Other sort of so-called, trappings of success are very transient, and they can be important at different stages of your life for obvious reasons, like supporting your family and providing a good life for your family. But ultimately, it's your relationships with other human beings that give your life a purpose and meaning and value. And my parents are 94 and 91. I mean, I've seen them slowly, slowly age. I've seen their lives physically diminish. I've seen them lose their friends and how they are managing their different physical challenges with such dignity and courage, and seeing that what their life has come down to is really because Mum is legally blind and can't hear very well and has had a stroke, so she's on a frame, and my dad is on a frame, and his senses are diminishing. So their life has become sort of more focused on family, really, and friends. They do one social thing a week now, which is their Vision Australia walking group. But that's so important to them. Just sitting and chatting with other people is everything. And they had to give up bowling, and I wrote them a letter yesterday. They dictated it to me, thanking the bowling group for their friendship and companionship and for the fun they had with them, but they're unable to go anymore. But that was really, these connections are really important. You know, as Mum said, because they only do one thing a week now, they're just in their little unit. Really. So you can see firsthand. And it's hard because growing up in the 50s and 60s and being born a baby boomer, we were in the age of the nuclear family. Like, the extended family was sort of passé. It was a nuclear family, and we were all encouraged to travel and to move away and see the world and do our own thing, which felt really sophisticated and felt worldly and exciting, and it did give you a view of the world that you would never have had if you didn't go on your travels and be a backpacker and things, and it gave you aspirations and opportunities you wouldn't have had if you stayed in your own small hometown. But then you get to an age where you think, well, actually, I understand the extended family. You either sort of first clock onto that idea when you have kids and you realize there are no aunts and uncles and grandma and grandpa around to help you. And then as you get older, you realize, well, actually, there's no family around to take me to the shops. There's no family around to take me to the doctors. So you have to sort of outsource your aged care, like we outsource our childcare. And I'm not sure it's the best system. I'm trying to train my children to get back to the extended family. I want them to live with me as long as possible.
So your friends are important, but your family is clearly extremely important, Jean Kitson.
Yes, of course. Of course. But, you know, I have friends that don't necessarily have family, so they're my family as well.
So, Jean, do you have any messages you want to pass on to the listeners of this program, The Baby Boomer's Guide to Life in the 21st Century?
Just keep that sense of freedom and independence and liberation, I suppose, we had. Keep that sense that, you know, life is a huge opportunity and that we can change the world. Keep changing the world. Keep making it better. That's what I would say.
Now, every guest on Nostalgia Town gets the opportunity to nominate a song for us to go out on. Have you had a bit of a think about what you'd like to hear?
Jeff, I think I would love to hear Rainy in My Heart by Buddy Holly. That will bring back great memories.
Of burned up mouths.
Of third degree burns to the roof of my mouth from lava jam.
Thank you very much for joining us today on Nostalgia Town, Jean Kitson.
Thank you very much, Jeff. It's been a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you.